This morning's scripture reading is from the book of Mark, chapter 3, verses 31 through 35, New Revised Standard, updated edition. Then his mother and his brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him and called him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you." And he replied, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And looking at those who sat around him, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother." Thanks be to God.
Old Testament scripture this morning is 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 through 20. By the way, we don't have any kids in the sanctuary this morning, young people, but Annette's still ready. Annette is always on the ready, just to let you know, to make water balloons for young people to throw at the pastor. I don't know why she takes such enthusiasm in doing this. There's the balloons right there. No. This time there's an age restriction. Oh, is Bella here? Oh no, I am going to receive water balloons then. Okay. Bella is working down in the kitchen, so. Darn. I'm glad she's here.
Exactly what is the age level?
I guess if you're still in school. So Katie too.
I'm in school.
As a student. Oh yeah, she's in school too, Sally.
The party's rolling.
Oh man, I need like some kind of lawyer to help me figure out the definition. So yeah, but anyway, there will be. Young at heart, yeah, forgot that. So anyway, there will be water balloons.
I feel the love.
Yeah, just got done saying how much love there is in the congregation. Yeah. But anyway, Old Testament scripture this morning is from 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 4 through 20. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "You are old, and your sons do not follow in your ways. Appoint for us then a king to govern us like the other nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to govern us." Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they've rejected me from being king over them. Just as they have done to me from the day I brought them up out of Egypt to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so also they're doing to you. Now then, listen to their voice only. You shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." So Samuel reported all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and to run before his chariots, and he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his ground, and to reap his harvest, and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. You'll take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He'll take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his courtiers. He will take 1/10 of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and courtiers. He will take your male and female slaves and the best of your cattle and donkeys and put them to his work. He'll take one-tenth of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And on that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you on that day." But the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, we're determined to have a king over us, so that we may be like other nations, and that our king may govern us and go out before us and fight our battles." May God bless and lend understanding to the reading of his word. When the elders of Israel demanded, "Give us a king," the prophet Samuel was upset. But God said to Samuel, in effect, "Don't take it personally. They have not rejected you. They've rejected me from being king over them." So God would like to be king over us. And an all-powerful God could make it instantly so. But for whatever reason, God doesn't do it this way. God chooses to be gentle. God chooses to persuade. God chooses to stand there and say, "Hey, I could love you. I could help you. I'm right here." But if people choose not to let God be their king or their ruler, God isn't going to force God's self upon them. God isn't going to force them to follow and worship God. Instead, in this particular situation, God relented. God just said, "Well, give them what they're asking for then. Go ahead. Have a human be your king." Not that God could not foresee what would happen. God gave Samuel a warning, which he shared with the people. "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He'll take your sons. He'll take people to plow his ground and reap his harvest. He'll take your daughters. He'll take the best of your fields, your vineyards, your olive orchards. He'll take one-tenth of your grain, one-tenth of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves," which is should have been a buzzword for them, because they just spent, you know, trying to get out of slavery, hundreds of years of slavery in Egypt. And God's saying, "If you have a king again, you're going to have be slaves again. And in short, you're going to hate it. I know you're going to hate it." But despite God's warning, people still wanted a king, because that's what all the other nations had. It was like they had to keep up with the Philistines. And true to God's prophecy, the results were calamitous. It's really what a lot of the Old Testament is about. If you look at 1 and 2 Kings, you look at 1 and 2 Samuel, you look at Chronicles, you look at things that happened in the Old Testament, and it's just one bad king after another, over and over again, like a broken record. Do you all remember LP records? They'd skip it, and it says, "Bad king, bad king, bad king," over and over again. We like to think that we're different here in the United States. And it really doesn't require more than a surface knowledge of American history to know that our first president was George Washington, and that he was so popular that he was offered the position of king and turned it down, to his credit. Now, this week I decided to research that particular episode. I didn't really know the circumstances of it. I've heard that he was offered the kingship and he turned it down. In 1782, when the United States was without a constitution, that didn't come until 5 years later, we operated under what was called the Articles of Confederation. And it wasn't a very good system. That was kind of like a pre-constitution that we operated under. And it was all the states kind of had a loose affiliation with one another. And it was really hard to govern under the Articles of Confederation. There was no president at that time. There was Congress. And what happened in 1782 is Colonel Louis Nicola wrote a letter to Washington. complaining about how poorly the troops were being paid. Seems like nothing's changed, huh, through the years. And at the time, he didn't have any luck with Congress. Sometimes it would take weeks, months, years for Congress to act and devote pay to these people that were serving our country. And so Nicola made the argument, in effect, that it'd be more efficient if we had a king who could simply order it done. Pay the soldiers. That's my decree. Get the money out there now. And what if that king were George Washington? That's the thrust, the gist of his argument in late 18th century language. Washington always worried about his character, reacted strongly and immediately, and documented it so that others could find it, so that history could find that he reacted against this letter. You know, he'd been present at the creation of the Declaration of Independence. And much of that document focuses on the abuses of and excesses of power exercised by King George III. And Washington instinctively, as did most people, knew that the whole point of the revolution was to throw off the oppression of the kings of Europe that were having such a their way on this continent. So he replied and had his aides document this carefully so history would know that he himself had composed this. He wrote, "No incident in the course of the war in me triggers painful feelings as your message. That such ideas are circulating in the army as you expressed it." And the short answer is no. I'm not going to be your king. We don't want a king here. Nicola issued a contrite apology, and they never discussed the matter again. Afterwards, the two men actually resumed their working relationship, which I think is a testimony. Again, a guy concerned about character, he wanted to be gracious. And so he was gracious to Nicola, even though Nicola had suggested such an abomination. And as you know, starting in 1789, Washington served as president, not king. He served two terms and then retired to Mount Vernon, never to seek power again. And after the presidency, the presidency did not go to an heir of Washington's, if there was one to be found. Instead, it went to a national election, as we do, resulting in the next presidency, John Adams' presidency. Somewhere in the Middle Ages, an idea developed about the so-called divine right of kings. And that divine right of kings said that kings were answerable to no one except God. Only God could tell the king what to do. And that effectively, here on earth, kings could do whatever they wanted with no repercussions. Apparently, whoever contrived that idea of the divine right of kings didn't read the Bible, specifically this passage in 1 Samuel that I read this morning. If they had, they would have seen in the book of 1 Samuel that God didn't really want a king over Israel. This was not God's idea. Those who believed in the divine right of kings, which I think should, you know, it's a heresy. I mean, people still believe it. I've known someone who actually believes this stuff. Kings can do whatever they want. And there are still kings peppered throughout the world, and there are strong men and dictators who act the same way. Like, I only have to answer to God. I can do what I want. And people who believe that God has given them the authority to act without repercussions must have ignored the warnings that God is giving here in 1 Samuel through the prophet Samuel. God issued warnings about what would happen if a king were appointed. All those books in the Old Testament, it's always the same script. Northern kingdom, southern kingdom, unified kingdoms for a time, for just about 80 years. One bad king after another. Sure, there were good kings peppered in there. But time and again, it is recorded, the king did evil in the sight of the Lord and died and was buried with his forefathers. Even the so-called good kings like David and Solomon engaged in great evil. David in murder and at the very least adultery. Solomon, who had 700 wives, turned from the God who put him in power and decided to worship the false gods of the wives that he had taken on. And after hundreds of years of this, eventually God had enough. And then in 586 BC, the kingdoms fell, never to return. And that's the point. It's over, never to return. And yet, even after all that, after that hundreds of years of debacle, the people still had it in their mind that God was going to come back and appoint another earthly king. And we go back to David, and we go back to Solomon. And then what they got instead was Jesus. And they didn't understand who he was going to be. And even in the days of Jesus, they suffered under the oppression of the Roman emperor, who was pretty much like the king, just as brutal, just as mean, just as rapacious, just taking and taking from the people. And even as they lived under that monarchy, they still wanted a monarchy of their own. And in the passage, you might wonder, why did Penny read the passage that she read this morning about Jesus and his mother and brothers showing up, and Jesus didn't want to see them? Kind of unlike Jesus, isn't it? You know, his mom comes to visit. You think of Jesus being a nice Jewish boy, right? Mom comes to visit me. I'm going to go see my mom. Boy, my mom's birthday was yesterday, and you know what? We all called her. We're not Jewish, but we're good boys and girls. We call our mother on her birthday and send cards and everything, other things. But instead, Jesus surprisingly said, Who is my mother? Who are my brothers? Whoever does the will of God is my mother and my brother. I believe that they didn't understand. I believe that Jesus' mother at that time and his brothers at that time did not understand what he was trying to do. They thought, they saw all of the miraculous circumstances of his birth and thought, God's going to give us another king. He's going to be the next David. And that wasn't what God had in mind at all. And Jesus knew that. They thought they were going to have an earthly king. And they were disappointed because Jesus wasn't acting the way an earthly king is supposed to act. He was saying things that an earthly king isn't supposed to say. And they came to him to talk to him, I think, to say, you know, you're never going to be king if you keep saying this stuff. The beautiful thing is his family eventually got on board. His mother was at the foot of the cross when he died. His mother was part of the early church praying for what's next from God. At least one of his brothers, perhaps more, served in the new church that started after his resurrection and ascension. Because Jesus knew, going way back to 1 Samuel, that what God really wants is to be king over us. Not a human king, but God as king, God as leader. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother, Jesus said. Let God be the king and nobody else. Even when facing death, when Pilate asked Jesus if he's the king of the Jews, Jesus replied, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." When we look at the apparatus of government, the frustration of getting things done here, the way things work now. You can't blame somebody for wanting a king. Back when Nicola wrote Washington, in a sense, he was right. At times, it's easier to just have a king issue a decree and make it so. You can wipe out anything that you find unpleasant about our current system, about our current life here in this country, with just a king's decree. One word, and we could straighten everything out, right? That's the fantasy. The reality is, the kings are rapacious, and they take everything that's good out of our lives. But we live with this frustrating government that's where it's really hard to get things done. You know, I probably spent an hour wasted this week trying to find a quote that I am certain Franklin Roosevelt said, because he'd be the guy to say it. But I couldn't find it. So you'll just have to accept this quote from whatever the source is. In our government, getting a law passed is a little like elephants mating. It all happens at a very high level. There's a lot of commotion involved. And it takes 2 years for it to produce anything. A little off color, I know. It is. It's slow, cumbersome, frustrating. And so the temptation is there now and was then for a king. But the truth remains the same. In Scripture, God alone must be king. God alone must be the monarch of our hearts. God alone must be the one we listen to, the one we tithe to, the one that we follow. And the prophecy is there and still valid. Any other choice but following God and making God the king leads to calamity.